This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Open for Business is powered by BossBolay.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
Good morning, this is Rina Liu. You're listening to Enterprise. One out of 12 Malaysians are an older person, and the number of older persons are likely to increase to 11% of the Malaysian population at 3.3 million people by 2020. So that was last year's figure. Between 2020 and 2046, Malaysia's 65 plus population will double from 7% to 14%. Do I dare say that I will fall into that category? Now, Homage is a tech company that provides on-demand, holistic, non-medical and medical services to seniors and adults, allowing them to age and recover at home with grace, control and dignity. I'm here with PC Gan, Country Manager for Homage Malaysia, and Jillian T, Founder and CEO of Homage, based out of Singapore. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning. Morning, Frida.
Good morning.
Okay, so Jillian, we've got to start with you. What made you decide to do this?
Yeah, I think, wow, the reasons go quite personal and deep. I was brought up by two seniors, actually. So one is my grandmother, maternal grandmother, and then my second is, someone who was engaged with my family to take care of me while my, you know, while my parents went through a bit more of a turbulent time, would say, in the family. So both had a huge impact on me, and unfortunately, both passed on from chronic illness, and I, as a child, that left a strong impression on me because, you know, both of them passed. I think one passed when I was teenagers. So I, remember that period pretty well. And I think I'm sure for those who have gone through similar experiences than I have, they understand it really makes you reflect on quite a few things. And so I think I've always carried that with me. And recently when more family members got sick, and of course, at that time I had, I built some more business and technology experience, and I realized that actually there needs to be a better solution in this space, and it can't be more meaningful. I can't think of a more meaningful way to put my time towards. So I then saw that there was a real gap and decided to commit to solving this problem. So I can share more about the problems, but really I think it's really about just the lack of transparency in this space, and how do you know you can find someone you can trust to take care of people who are near and dear to you, to the fact that the whole industry has not really been, improved or enhanced by technology, where so many other industries like education, everything, that we do day to day has been made better in many ways by tech. And the question is, how do you use technology to enable a better experience for long-term care, and that's so relevant for all of us. Yeah. As you mentioned.
Right. Very interesting. I do want to go a little bit deeper on that. So all these happened when you were a teenager. Was it the issue of money? I guess the feeling of helplessness, right? I mean, maybe you can give an example of what happened to the grandparent, perhaps.
Yeah, I think it was everything. It was what happens after this hospital discharge and, what is the care needed? So there was a lot of... Now that we have been in the space for a while, we know the formal term for it, like care planning and care navigation, right? So just even being aware of what you need after, which is where you spend majority of your time, which is in the home, within your family, with family support and within your communities. So I think that's the first thing. And the second is when we needed help, we didn't know what to ask for. And so there was a lot of guessing and kind of just hit and miss, just going around and try to find out as much as you can. And so a lot of it was very by chance and also informal. Yeah. So my dad is Malaysian, right? So and my mom is Singaporean. So was my caretaker. She was Malaysian as well, from KL. And I just remember it was tough because, it was really tough. And you just didn't know whether the people who were coming to help first of all, how to think about someone to support you to think about. So this, if you have a primary caregiver, actually you can do this and you can arrange it this way. And I think just having that support, and then after that, once care kickstarted, then you were kind of left in the dark too. So you didn't know who was coming. You didn't know if they knew whether or not your loved one was, the information was passed through. So then I think quite a few can relate. You know, you ended up creating your own system, which is spreadsheets or WhatsApp and things like that. So it became quite painful. And then, of course, there was a lot of admin. There was a lot of administration, which I felt could have been, that should fade into the background. All the admin should have just been taken care of, just like the way that, for example, right now we might order food or grocery shop. But the admin was still very manual. And so then piecing it all together, I realized actually there can be a way to, I think most importantly is build trust with the system and also use the tech to take care of a lot of the admin little logistics parts.
I know. Because the focus should be on caring and not taking care of the admin, right? And I can relate to you because my dad passed away while in hospital, but we were about to bring him home. And we were thinking, like, what do you do, right? When we bring him home, none of us are, not the money issue, but just like, what do you do, you know? But also at the same time, so strange, right? Because you're saying this coming from Singapore, which is a little bit more, I would have thought a little bit more with it than over us, over here, us over the river. But so it's interesting how you feel that technology is going to help you do this. Now, I'm going to just ask you as well. You're in, right now you're in Singapore, you're in Malaysia and Australia, right? Singapore obviously came first. And then how did you proceed to open the other markets?
Yeah. So Singapore came first. Interestingly, it's like going a full circle in my life. Coming home. And my dad's from Segamat, right? And my caretaker. So she took care of me every day till I was 12. And in many ways, actually, I've shared with PC before as well. Going to KL is almost like a homecoming because it's almost like a tribute to her and a homage to her. And I think a lot of it was twofold, right? One is, okay, of course, from a business perspective, we had to look at what was the opportunity in KL and in Malaysia and broader. And then secondly, it's, of course, I think sometimes when you're in this space, you have to be motivated by a deeper reason. Yeah, it's not the easiest space to be in. So you really do need to be driven by purpose and by mission, which is really important. And I was motivated for Malaysia because of a personal reason as well, because of my caretaker, I also had a strong affinity for Malaysia, almost considering that as part of me. And I think it just came very naturally. And of course, that connected the dots with the business side. So we looked at, all the stats that you talked about before, right? But also the state of the provider suite. So we never think that we will go in and transform or disrupt. No. We just want to be a part of the solution. We want to partner with others because this is really an ecosystem. What I've learned in healthcare, which is that you can't go at it alone. So, but you can build very strong offerings that can support your partners and can enable your partners, but also, ideally can increase the accessibility. And to your point, you also had that experience, right, Frida, is to also increase that awareness of true partnering, for example, partnering with hospitals or partnering with insurers. And importantly, of course, ensuring that when people need us, they can find us directly as well. So yeah, that's the way we thought about it. And Malaysia just made a lot of sense for us because we saw that there was a need and a gap. Yeah. Singapore, I mean, the gaps are actually, we see it so much, I think, and globally. But of course, in Asia Pacific, the gaps are really real, and I've seen it now across Singapore, Malaysia, Australia, and of course our fourth and fifth markets pretty soon.
Ah, okay. So ready to announce your fourth and fifth markets, and when you'll be ready?
Yeah. No, I think one of them is certainly going to be Japan because we managed to partner with someone who was very like-minded with us last year, and since then put on another Japanese partner as well. So we're pretty excited to go to market with them. And, they have been working very closely within the aged care sector, and they have 13,000 partners in Japan, all across Japan. So we just want to partner with them for the Japan side. But definitely looking forward to catching up again and keeping you posted, Frieda.
Right. Okay. So that was Singapore started in 2017.
Yes.
Malaysia was 2018, and Australia was 2019.
Well, we had a skip year because of COVID-19.
Right. So then we all had a skip year, didn't we? We had a skip 2 years, really. I'm going to ask you a little bit later on how the needs are, how if they are different in these different places. And I'll get PC to chime in as well on, you know, how is it different in Malaysia. I'm here with PC Gan and Jilin T from Homage Bay. This is Enterprise BFF 89.9.
Open for Business will reopen in a few moments. Powered by BossBully.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
Being first matters. BFM 89.9.
Open for Business is powered by BossBully.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
Good morning, this is Frieda Liu. You're listening to Enterprise, and I'm here with PC Gan, Country Manager of Homage Malaysia, and Jilin T, Founder and CEO of Homage. And I saw what you did there. You know, it's home, age, and homage, right? So I think I get where you're coming from, Jilin. But I want to, so right now you're in Singapore, Malaysia, and Australia. How are the needs different? And PC, maybe you can also just let us know, you know, what are the differences if you were just looking at Malaysia and Singapore?
So I will probably bring in a similar experience. My grandfather actually was staying at home. He refused to get care. So I think, you know, as we grow old, there's a little bit of
stubbornness.
Yeah, that, and also the acceptance of, you know, I can still do things. So a lot of times, seniors prefer to be at home. Even if they are unwell, they try not to trouble their children. So I think that for me was that portion, right? If I were to grow old or even provide something for my parents, what are the options here in Malaysia? Mm. Actually, I feel that maybe because our culture is that we do not want to send them to a home, a nursing home. So that should always be the last resort. Then what else is there really? I think there are a lot of options that's coming up here in Malaysia, but it's still not being considered. Home is always one of them. So I guess for me over here is, if I'm going to be providing a home for my parents and ultimately the rest of Malaysians, how else can I make it to be accessible? And with that said, can I actually make these professionals come to your home instead of us having to leave our own space, our comfort space, right? So I think with this whole pandemic, it has accelerated the acceptance of tech, yeah, and home care.
So okay. There's right. And so that was the thing, right? When I look at the maturity of these markets, right? Are the needs different then, right? Because of the different levels of maturity in these countries, or do you find that there are a lot of similarities be it in Singapore, Malaysia, Australia?
Yeah, I think the way when I see it, right, Frieda, it's quite frightening in some ways because we have had a lot of investment into medical settings and facilities, which is important, right? Because we have medical needs and acute needs. But what happens after that is their social components, mobility components, helping them function well every day, you know, feeling like they have confidence and, you know, it's the dignity too. Sometimes when you have increased dependence, one of the hardest things to hold on to is your dignity, right? And we see that generally across board, investment and into the infrastructure for long term, which inevitably is holistic. So meaning it combines social components, social wellness, personal care, everyday living activities, as well as some of the medical side, of course, you know, like nursing and so on, rehab, therapy. So I see that across board. So I think that's the first one. And I realized that also, really, if you look at it, it's from a macro perspective, actually, the problems that we're facing is the same. The systems might be different. The funding might be different. How we assess that funding might be a little bit different. But generally, the concepts and the fundamentals are all the same. We all require long-term care. The probability is all, you know, what we're looking at, right, is a 50% probability of support for at least one activities of daily living. So the dependency increase for anyone age 65 and above, right? And we are actively seeing that in Asia, by within the next 15 years plus, we will have more elderly than children. And so I've seen in Singapore, Malaysia, Australia, of course, government funding schemes and are different. Insurance adoption for long-term care is different, but the needs are fundamentally the same, you know. And I think we also see different levels of infrastructure already built for long-term care. As I can give you an example. So for Australia, we see that there's national disability insurance. It's mainstream. So meaning the government has created these schemes for disability insurance, and there's a lot of awareness of it. But they also, every system have bottlenecks, and the gaps is, again, in care navigation and planning and assessment to kickstart the plan. Then, and there's also not enough providers, and every provider is doing their own thing. So there is very fragmented, like we call it. Also, I would say the level of, because our needs are the same, but generally this industry is traditional. So which means that very little tech have fully gone deep enough to change the experience for people who need this kind of solution, right? Massive need, massive scale of need, but how much investment, both time, dedication, people working on this problem, and of course the tech part, very low la, in general. Yeah,
right. It is getting to be a big issue, and I don't think we talk enough about it, right? Now you have three main areas of service, namely home care, nursing, home therapy, and specialized care, right? And of course, PC, I know you come from a same industry, but not same where technology comes into play. So can you tell me a little bit how what you all provide comes into play for all these different services, whether it's home care, nursing, right down to specialized care?
I think because my previous life, I've always been working in startups, you know, and startups is always about disrupting or at least bridging gaps that we see. And then in the most recent one, the fact that I was working in an insurance space, and then given my personal experience, I was looking at unlocking some of these payer market, if you can call it, to provide more financial accessibility. And then with that, you know, the entire burden is not on, in this case, maybe the sandwich generation like myself to take on that. So that's one. The second thing is, I think before I touch on the services, is I look at the entire COVID-19, what I learned from it, you know, when we roll out vaccination, although, you know, the first one to get vaccine is the senior citizens, right? The thought process into it is great. But one of our services, which is a vaccination escort or even medical escort, skyrocketed because these seniors are at home. Most of the time, maybe limited in terms of mobility. So then that's where they look at, okay, if my child is not available to take 2 hours off to take me to a vaccination center, I need to look for any services out there. So which then comes back down to why these services are so needed in this space. It started off with, of course, the activities daily living. And then there's also therapy. But what was even more obvious during this time here is really the medical escort, which we thought like, oh yeah, this could work too. Because during this time, although we are all working from home, we all need that, whether if it's companionship or even somebody who is equipped with the skill set to be able to transfer someone from, say, for example, a car to a wheelchair and then back to seeing the doctor and, you know, back home.
Okay, so here's the reality. My mom is in Sarawak, and I haven't been able to see her for 2 years. She's 83 years old, fairly independent, but, you know, still... What should I be thinking about for her now at this point? And what sort of services would you all be able to provide in that case? She's very savvy, though. She's very tech savvy. She's always WhatsApping me.
I generally would look at who are the people at home staying with her. The second one is more of the conducive environment. And a lot of all these things needs to be assessed before a senior can live comfortably at home. Because we are talking about deteriorated eyesight, just mobility-wise, right? Whether if she's on walking frame and all of these, I will definitely start off with, you know, is there any help nearby? The second one is the conducive of the environment. And the third one is how quickly can you get help should you need somebody? And I guess that's where we look at the amenities around us. That's one. And then, of course, if in the absence of all of these things, then that's where home care comes in.
Right. And how do you work with home care and nursing? How do you tie up with them?
From the Malaysia space, what we do is that because we have got the largest pool of care professionals or care providers, be it caregivers, nurses, therapists, we have worked with organizations like hospitals in terms of being the home care arm. That's one. The second piece is that for nursing homes, we provide our specialized or at least our skilled care professionals to provide care for them. So that's in terms of resourcing. And then on the last piece to homes, it's exactly like what you have said, all the different services that we have, depending on what their needs are.
And how difficult is it to find help?
In Malaysia, we work very closely with universities, people who has got this calling to want to serve the seniors. And lastly, it's really for people who are retired, still able to give maybe, you know, a companionship, maybe just, you know, in that space so that, you know, there's someone whom they can relate to. So we provide, in a way, employments to them.
What about in, over in Singapore and Australia?
Yeah. So I think across the whole group, I think we, you know, we, the way that we look at it is, you know, in, within medical settings, professionals are trusted, right? I mean, you automatically trust them because they're professionalized, right? So outside of the hospital, when you're using technology to deploy them in a very decentralized way, you know, how do you look at professionalizing them? So we enlarge the caregiver pool, the care professional pool, to PC's point about, you know, we're therapists, carers, doctors, by professionalizing them. So we take them through training, we upskill them, we give them flexible schedule, you know, and income, of course. And of course, we take them through this process of professionalization so that anything that's in, even in-home non-medical care is professionalized, which is a great need, right? Because then, if not, how do you know if they're meant to take care of your family? And the important thing is when we capture their skills and qualifications, they are matched to the unique care profile. So someone who is the best person to take care of my uncle might not be the best person to take care of my grandmother because they have different needs and it's so different, their unique backgrounds. So one of the services that we offer very importantly is also this clinical assessment. So this clinical assessment, so you think about the needs part, which is we put together the care plan, we assess what they need. So some of the things that we look at, that PC mentioned, is like things like mobility level, what is their daily routine, you know, are there special dietary requirements, do they use mobility aids, you know, and so on. So we assess that, and then that translates into a care plan. And we then match it right? We match it with the right carer. So as an example, someone who only speaks Cantonese, and if they only speak Cantonese and they also are wheelchair bound, actually you need someone, ideally the right carer for her is very familiar with wheelchair handling, and you need someone ideally that can communicate, so speak Cantonese. Tough, right? But we have actually made that an algorithm. So we've actually used technology to make that a matching system. How we find our carers, typically we find people also with healthcare backgrounds. They tend to have some form of healthcare backgrounds, social work backgrounds, counseling backgrounds, psychology. I mean, but generally they come from all walks of fields, because we found that one of the most important things is actually the motivation to provide care. I met this husband and wife couple. They're both care professionals on HomeAge. And actually, they're in their early 60s. They're both retired. So they worked in the finance industry for about 25 years. And I asked them, why are you doing this? Of course, they went through training. Everyone also is CPR certified and AED. So it's actually not easy to become a HomeAge care. But anyway, so they shared, actually, this really impressed upon me. And then since then, of course, many, many stories. So they were like, Jillian, we took care of our parents throughout our working life. And at one point, one of them actually took a sabbatical. Well, that really changed their perspective, how they see things. And so it was because they had the experience of caring for their own family. Then they decided to help others after their family passed. And then there's another one. This one is actually a bit closer to home. It's my mother's choir friend. So this is not an elderly, but her daughter. Her daughter is 25 and suffered from terminal illness, so had brain cancer, brain tumor. And so HomeAge was part of the support system, not all of it, but part of it. After she passed on, she actually became a carer. Again, she was part of the corporate world. So I think the walks of life, everyone goes through a different journey. Mm. And how they decide to pick up this carer role and become equipped for it is many different reasons. But we've also seen people who are social enterprise owners. So this is what I love, right? Like we literally, you know, talking about how do you enable a decentralized, very vibrant, motivated workforce to provide professional care, and using technology and combining that with the Kampong spirit, I think is really important. So if you use technology to really amplify the Kampong spirit, right, I think a lot of magic can happen. So that's our thinking.
Okay. Final question, both to you and PC and you, Jillian. I guess PC, like the pandemic, right, how has that affected the running of the business? And I guess like for Jillian as the entrepreneur, right, what has the last 2 years taught you?
I've learned a lot of things during this pandemic, whether if it's from a holistic point of view, where there's just so many gaps in this health care space, right? That's the first one. The second one is like within the business in itself, there are certain services that were more prominent during this time. And that's when it's a realization that this is what truly people need most. Of course, you know, in the medical space, there is always the nurses who are needed for more chronic conditions. But I think there's a lot of isolation during this time. That's the other service that was more prevalent or even more obvious right now, which is the companionship. Because everyone is isolated, they just need the check-in, the whole grocery shopping, meal preparation. So yeah, I think certain services are more obvious to us right now.
I guess with the pandemic, you really realize what are the gaps, right, in all the different spaces. And for you, Jillian, as the entrepreneur, right, you know, what have you learned in the last 2 years now?
Of course, there's much to be said about the business side, which is technological and all that, you know, but I think one of the biggest things is that your team really is the one that goes through thick and thin with you. And in many ways, we made a lot of COVID, national support happen, but I could not have imagined it. You know, there's this thing, it's you think it's impossible until it's done. So, and then I think about, oh, how did we do it? And then I think about, oh, wow, it's because we had this group of people who propped us up and they lifted us up. And it was people who have been with us for years, you know, of course, PC included. And, you know, I just think about these amazing homages, like we call them, which is part of the team. And they really made it happen. So I think that's the first thing, is building a team with the right mindset that can overcome challenges. On a very personal note, of course, that also you're also dealing with it too and adjusting to it. Second, I think just to share a final thought is, I do think that it really convinced me that when you're setting out to do, when we started Homage, I think we really was very driven by the why, right? The mission of building, literally, if you can't envision the future, you cannot build it. So it was a vision of enabling more wellness, more readiness, and helping people take care of each other better, put simply. And just being really, really smart now of getting access to what we need and then making sure that that happens. And I have never been even more convinced that the what we've set out to build, which is I still see is foundational, there's so much more to do, can enable support in crisis times like this, because we are moving away from this centralized care only in this one spot to care wherever you are, you know, wherever you are, wherever, whatever you need. So this care where you are concept, I have really been very, very grateful that we can continue to work on it, but it really impressed onto me, it further emphasized, I became even more convinced that we need to build this, and, if it's not others, why can't, it should be us. We just pour our time and our lives into it to make it happen. Yeah, so that's my final thought, which is even more convinced about the why, the motivation.
All right. Thank you very much, ladies. I've been speaking to PC Gan, Country Manager for Homage Malaysia, and Julia T, Founder and CEO of Homage. You've been listening to Enterprise BFF 89.9.
Are you open for business? Register your company with BossBully.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.